From Washington, D.C., across the nation and around the world, stand by for an overview of the hottest topics and people being discussed on air, online, at the coffee shop, and across the backyard fence, powered by the research of Talkers Magazine, The National Conversation. It's time for the Michael Harrison Wrap. Here's Michael Harrison.
Thank you, Victoria Jones. Monday, March 23rd through Friday, March 27th, 2020. It was another surrealistic week on Planet Crazy. The coronavirus dominated our national conversation on a level that supersedes any individual topic for three straight weeks in the 30-year history of Talkers Magazine research. That surpasses both Persian Gulf Wars, the O.J. Simpson murder case, the crash of 2008, the 2000 presidential election, and even 9/11. The big talking point, lives versus livelihood. Coming up in the next hour, we'll be hearing from people with microphones, smartphones, and digital recording devices, sharing their observations and the feelings of their target constituencies with whom they do their daily dance of affirmation, all part of the verbal stew in which we try to avoid the modern-day syndrome of seeking victory at the expense of truth. Welcome to the Michael Harrison Wrap, an examination of the past week's hottest political and social topics discussed in the American talk media. Information is gathered from a variety of sources, including data tracked by the broadcasting trade publication Talkers Magazine, of which I'm editor and publisher. Okay, let's rock. Joining us now is Kevin Casey, executive editor of Talkers Magazine. Kevin, give us a rundown of the 10 most talked about stories on talk shows in America this past week.
Thank you, Michael. At number 10, the Great Barrier Reef bleaching incident and climate change. The Great Barrier Reef in Australia just experienced its third mass bleaching event in the last 5 years, and its most widespread on record.
Warm ocean temperatures are the main cause of coral bleaching. The corals turn white as a stress response to warm water temperatures by expelling the algae that grows inside them, which is their main energy source and gives them their color. Coral reefs are some of the most vibrant marine ecosystems on the planet. Between a quarter and one-third of all marine species rely on them at some point in their life cycle. And the largest and most important of these is the Great Barrier Reef. Fortunately, the water is beginning to cool, but the situation has heated up the conversation about climate change and global warming. Between the wildfires and now this, Australia seems to have become the canary in the coal mine.
At number 9, celebrities with coronavirus. One of the sobering aspects of COVID-19 that makes it hit home as being real is the increasing list of well-known people who have tested positive for the disease.
These include such figures as actor Tom Hanks, Senator Rand Paul, Britain's heir to the throne, Prince Charles, and, just recently, the head of state, Boris Johnson.
At number 8, the Defense Production Act. The act authorizes the president to require businesses to sign contracts or fulfill orders deemed necessary for national defense. It also allows the president to protect certain materials and products from hoarding and price gouging. It authorizes the president to basically have much more control over the civilian economy in the name of national defense.
During Thursday's White House press briefing, President Trump reiterated his stance on the act, saying, "We don't need it," despite calls from both sides of the aisle to invoke the measure.
At number 7, an increase in scams. With the coronavirus crisis, we are seeing a vast increase in the number of scams that are being perpetrated on the American public.
These include fraudulent investments, bogus COVID-19 remedies, and false communiques from fake federal agencies telling people they owe fees in order to receive their government relief checks. Be very careful of anything along these lines that makes its way to you via email or telephone.
At number 6, foreign affairs and U.S.-China relations. The coronavirus is forcing the nations of the world to interact and cooperate on a level we could not foresee merely months ago, with various levels of success and failure.
One of the sticking points in our already strained relationship with China, brought to the fore by the controversial use of the term Chinese virus by the president and a number of political commentators. I agree. We should hold China responsible for its role in the origination and early spread of this disease, or at least as a primary suspect. However, we should be careful to lay the blame on the Chinese Communist Party and not the Chinese people in China, the U.S., and around the world. The Chinese people are largely innocent and are victims of their repressive and often ruthless government. It's a shame that many Chinese Americans are experiencing discrimination here in the U.S. as a result of coronavirus fear.
At number five, social distancing and cultural changes. A significant segment of the American public are working from home as central places of business are closing and normally bustling centers of activity have become largely deserted.
This phenomenon will likely speed up the process of telecommuting as a normal part of American business and society 10 years in the next 10 weeks. We're going through a major paradigm shift as a result of what's happening out there.
At number four, the presidential race and politics. For the most part, the presidential race is on hold as the Democrats walk the narrow line between capitalizing on what they want to project as the president's shortcomings in handling the crisis and seeming disruptive and disloyal as Americans at a time we should all be pulling together. For the most part, Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders, who's still hanging in there, have been sidelined by this extraordinary turn of events.
More and more, there's a serious movement afoot for the Democrats to dump Biden and draft New York Governor Andrew Cuomo as their candidate. Knowing the way things go, I wouldn't expect the fragile moratorium on intense partisan politics to last more than a few more weeks. If that.
At number three, the healthcare system. Now we're entering the area of the talker survey where most of the conversational action is taking place. The U.S. now has the most diagnosed cases of COVID-19 in the world, and there is growing fear that our hospitals are filling up at an alarming rate and our resources in terms of equipment and medical personnel are being taxed beyond their present capacity.
The true heroes in this aptly termed war are the brave doctors, nurses, and medical professionals on the front lines fighting this microscopic, invisible, deadly enemy. They are the soldiers who deserve our gratitude and support.
At number two, the stimulus deal, the markets, and the economy. After partisan bickering over what many are calling politically motivated overreach by the Democrats, the Senate has passed an unprecedented $2 trillion relief package designed to bolster the economy and help small businesses and working people stay above water during the crisis.
Meantime, unemployment claims are coming in at a smothering level, and the stock market has been wildly undulating in what can best be described as a stomach-churning roller coaster ride.
At number one this week, the economy versus lives issue. This has been the key talking point and debate this past week. Should we remain in lockdown until we nip the spread of the coronavirus in the bud and flatten the curve as much as humanly possible, or try to get the American economy up and running as quickly as possible for fear of it being irrevocably ruined?
The focal point of the debate between life and livelihood has been the president's remarks that he would like to see the economy up and running by Easter. To quote the title of a classic Moody Blues album, it's clearly a question of balance. Thank you, Kevin Casey from Talkers Magazine. A large percentage of radio talk show hosts are self-quarantining and broadcasting their shows from home studios. Some are rather sophisticated, others makeshift, but the job is getting done. And the sound quality, other than an occasional barking dog, crying baby, or doorbell ringing, is pretty good. One such talker is my old friend Mike Gallagher, heard middays across the nation on the Salem Radio Network, whose show has been emanating from the kitchen counter in his Tampa, Florida condo. So, Mike Gallagher, are you broadcasting from a man cave, a laundry closet, a closet, a basement? What's your situation?
All of the above. All of the above. I'm in my condo in Florida. Been here for weeks. You know, it's been such a wild journey because I was scheduled to broadcast from CPAC. So everybody at CPAC, of course, was understandably nervous when it was revealed that somebody there was positive. But I got sick getting into Washington, D.C. and never left the hotel room. It was the craziest thing. So I didn't go anywhere near it because of a cold that I got, a pretty good cold. And, you know, you never know. I mean, you get symptoms, and I had a fever, and so I was worried. So I quarantined and stayed put for a couple of weeks and have just been working literally out of my condo, set up in the kitchen, and it's been perfect. You know, with the technology today of radio, you really can do the radio show from pretty much anywhere, and most people are. I got the biggest kick out of hearing Howard Stern, who's a notorious germaphobe, describe how guys in hazmat suits came to his, you know, mansion in Long Island, I guess, and were installing radio equipment, proper radio equipment, as Howard put it, in hazmat suits, you know, because everybody, of course, is so antsy and so worried and afraid. And of course, New York is just getting hit so hard. So it's understandable. So, but the ability to stay on the air at a time like this is crucial. We haven't missed a beat. We're live every day. We're on our YouTube channel, and we're video streaming every day. And it's been wonderful to connect with people all over the country during this difficult time.
Frankly, Mike, I think this is the way it's going to stay. I think a lot of companies are going to realize, hey, we can cut our costs now. People are able to work from home. They have the computer technology. It's not 2005 anymore. We have to worry about supervising people in their cubicle farms. People know they're tethered to their jobs. They're used to this. And I think that people are not going to go back. I mean, there will be some things where people go back, but a huge percentage of the workforce is going to stay home. And you know what's going to happen? We're going to catapult 10 years into the future in the next 10 months.
You're right on the money, as usual. Michael, businesses are going to rethink the way they conduct business going forward. You know, President Trump said that the other day, that there's going to be a lot of things that emerge on the other side of this that is going to that we're going to do differently. This country is going to do things differently on many levels. Frankly, I don't know if I'm ever going to shake another person's hand again.
The big question this week in terms of our national conversation has been the economy versus lives. And I know it sounds almost overly simplistic to reduce it to those terms, but for the sake of communication, I have no other choice. The shutdown, the lockdown, how long it's going to be, its impact on the economy. One side, the health and science world is saying, shut everything down, nip this thing in the bud. Don't worry about the economy. It'll recover or it won't, but we must save lives. And the other side, of course, is, well, we can't just let America die. The economy saves lives. It's important that we don't just shut the door to thinking about it. The president seems caught between these two forces and obviously has to make a decision or make decisions. What are your thoughts?
It's a very difficult conversation, but one that we have to have. I don't believe that we have to say that lives are expendable, and I don't know that anybody has said that. One reporter asked the president, how many deaths are acceptable to you? I mean, what an insulting, horrific thing. And of course, the president answered very quickly, none, zero. No loss of life should be acceptable. But there is an economic uncertainty. Governor Cuomo in New York said that this is unsustainable to continue this indefinitely. When Cuomo says it, of course, the media says, great, well done. When Trump essentially says the same thing, they flip out because, you know, orange man bad. They don't like the guy. And they're his critics. Certainly, he's gotten a lot of criticism for the Easter Sunday date of hoping to see, America open again. Listen, I don't know that there's anything wrong with trying to give people some hope. Realistically, we're not going to see packed churches on Easter Sunday. Realistically, this is a long haul. But you make a good point, Michael. If the middle class or mom and pop businesses and small businesses and medium businesses are wiped out forever as a result of being closed, that's not sustainable. And people won't have companies to go back to. Look at our business. I'm praying for radio. You know, we're finding new ways to reach people. Of course, listenership is it a big high right now, and maybe an all-time high. But there are people that have had to lay people off and companies that aren't advertising as vigorously as they used to. I think about local radio stations. What if the radio station has to go fold up, pack up, and close down, go dark.
Right.
Go dark. You know, and then you've got maybe 10 or 15 people or 20 people at a local station. They don't have a job to go back to. And there may be only one radio station in that community. And guess what? They never come back. So that's what Cuomo means about the lack of sustainability. We all have to be aware of that. But to make it this sort of linear kind of a one versus the other, of course human life is sacrosanct. Of course we need to stay away from each other. We should be socially distancing. But, you know, the president is right when he says some states have not been hit anywhere near Washington State or New York State or California. I think I heard in West Virginia, maybe one case, probably more than that. So we ought to know what we don't know, Michael. We don't know about spread. A lot of these scenarios where hundreds of thousands of ventilators are needed, as Dr. Deborah Birx pointed out, that's in worst case scenario if we do nothing. Well, we're doing plenty right now. And of course, the question remains for how long. And that's something that I pray that our leaders know. I know that Trump is being governed and guided by a lot of experts these doctors, all these people that are on the front lines of this, his attorney general, his treasury secretary, the infectious disease experts. He's not just, you know, willy-nilly sitting in the Oval Office flipping a coin. We've got to know that they're trying to do what's right for us, and it's a very difficult conversation, but a necessary one to have.
That's Salem Radio Network talk show host Mike Gallagher. Coming up next, a trip to the Big Apple and a conversation with a talk radio personality who's been out there on the streets of Manhattan washing and feeding the homeless. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. Bernadette Duncan spent 26 years as a radio talk show producer. In her new book, Yappy Days, Behind the Scenes with Newsers, Schmoozers, Boozers, and Losers, she shares her adventures in the trenches of big-time talk radio during the changing backdrop of America's pre- and post-9/11 realities. This exciting story includes Bernadette's impressions of the quirky celebrity talk show hosts whom she served during her career: Larry King, Sally Jesse Raphael, Gil Gross, Tom Snyder, Lou Dobbs, Charles Osgood, and more. It's full of anecdotes about hundreds of high-profile guests from media, show business, and politics, also quirky, ego-driven, and neurotic. Yappy Days, Behind the Scenes with Newsers, Schmoozers, Boozers, and Losers, an analytical look at the media, journalism, and the complex nature of ego. Get it now at Amazon.com. Continuing now with the Michael Harrison Wrap. One of the most colorful talk show hosts in America, heard daily on 77 WABC New York, is also a constant newsmaker in the big city where, as the founder of the legendary Guardian Angels, he's a modern-day superhero who protects the vulnerable and stands up for the downtrodden. Curtis Sliwa. You got a lot of coverage this past week in the news. There was a great story in the New York Post about you, the Guardian Angels, going into the street, literally, and helping the homeless. Fill us in exactly what happened.
Well, Michael, under normal circumstances, you know, like San Francisco, Los Angeles, there are a sea of homeless and emotionally disturbed persons who not only roam the streets, they live in the parks, the subways, the subterranean crevices. Like beneath us is Penn Station, the largest transit hub, but they also live in Grand Central Station and the Port Authority bus terminal. And there are thousands of them. So now that there are a few people walking around the street, working class people, they are very conspicuous and noticed. But the city and the state that is spending millions of dollars, and we always ask on the normal times, where does that money go? Well, they're not only not spending money on the homeless and emotionally disturbed, they've padlocked their offices. They don't have any of their trained social workers out in the streets dealing with them. So we have filled the void, we Guardian Angels, and we're feeding them because they need food and nutrition. They need to keep their immune systems up. But before they get any food, they must wash their hands, they must wash their face, because we don't want them spreading the coronavirus. Because let's face it, there are some people who say, why even bother with the emotionally disturbed and the homeless? Well, if you don't care about them, they could be carriers of the coronavirus. It'll spread in their community, and then it spreads to all communities. So for pragmatic, common sense reasons, you want to take care of these people that can't take care of themselves.
How have you gotten them, or how have you facilitated the washing of their hands?
Basically, the way you get a homeless person, or especially an emotionally disturbed person who is not in control of their mental faculties, is you had to have had a relationship with them in the past. And that's what I've established with them over the years, along with the many Guardian Angels. So they already identified Red Beret as being a person that you can go to, whether it's a male or female, and they're going to help you. Not to be frightened of them, even if you're going through all kinds of psychotic issues. And then I'll wash my hands first in a bucket. it's sort of like you show them. A lot of them, unfortunately, they're almost like childlike in the way they think. Then they get it. Okay, they got to wash their hands. So we pour the alcohol and the water solution on their hands, and we dry their hands. Then we give them their nutrition. We give them additional wipes. And we start asking them about who they are, where they're from. So it's almost like we're keeping track of the hundreds who are living amongst us each day that unfortunately normal people and the elected officials prefer to put on the outside looking in. They'd rather not deal with this problem, which they must.
Curtis, how are you financing this? I understand there have been hundreds of meals that have been given out. You have these little packets with sandwiches and peanut butter crackers and drinks. How are you paying for all this?
Michael Harrison, this is self-help. We don't want any government money because they're all out there groveling. You know, everyone, our Governor Cuomo, our Mayor de Blasio, you know, Chicken Little, the sky is falling. Not enough money, not enough ventilators. We're not getting on that line. What we're doing is there are people out there willing in sweat equity ways to provide food, nutrition, wipes, things that they have stocked up on over the years because they know the guardian angels will actually get it to the appropriate people who need it, in this case, the homeless and the emotionally disturbed. And sometimes we're reaching into our own guardian angel resources. We have booths now in 13 countries, 130 cities that we have to raise money for. They're all volunteers, including myself. But still, there's some cost to it. And we'll nickel and dime our way through this. But we're not going to be complaining to Trump in Washington that we need help or to our governor or our mayor or anyone else. We believe in self-help. Government will always be a dollar short and a day late in coming up with the remedies. But people can come up with the remedies, and it'll keep people in the community out of harm's way.
New York is being called the epicenter of the disease, and there are so many proportionate to the rest of the country cases of it in New York City and the surrounding area. Both chief executives in that part of the country, de Blasio as mayor, Cuomo as governor. What's your assessment of the job each of them has done?
Well, first off, they're selfish. Like all state legislators and also city legislators are. It's me, we need it, we're the epicenter, we have the most problems. And as I look at it, look, Donald Trump, who's formerly from New York, he's got to be the president to all the people. So whether it's Idaho, Wyoming, whether it's a big state like California, New York, or smaller states in the heartland of America, he's got to look at the resources and he's got to divide it up and make sure that everyone is taken care of. Not just the spoiled, pretentious group of people we are in New York State and New York City. We act like the whole world revolves around New York. Now, you cut my veins and arteries, I bleed as a New Yorker. But I will tell you this, I'm an American before I'm a New Yorker, and I want to make sure that all Americans are taken care of. And this idea that somehow it's apocalypse now, past the plate, you know, it's rapture, get your AK-47. It's suspicious. We survived 9/11. We survived the crash of 2008. We survived Superstorm Sandy because we came together as a community. In this case, they're telling us not even to trust our neighbor, that in fact the person that we've lived side by side with years may actually be carrying this secret enemy, the coronavirus, so don't have any contact with them. I reject that. I'm not a religious person, Michael Harrison. But I remember Mother Teresa and her nuns in Calcutta when they were tending to the lepers, as they continue to do in the leper colonies. They never wore gloves. They never wore masks. Gloves and masks are not going to help you in this situation. Washing your hands with old-fashioned soap and water and continuously doing so is the better remedy than a mask or gloves.
That's Curtis Sliwa, co-host of the Midday Curtis and Juliet Show on 77 WABC New York and founder of the legendary crime-fighting organization, the Guardian Angels. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison rap. There's no way you can do a credible overview of our national conversation in the thick of the coronavirus era without including a medical doctor. In this case, it's an MD who also hosts a successful daily coast-to-coast program on the Genesis Communications Network, Dr. Dahlia Wax.
Being in the media, you know, we've been working 24/7, so, you know, it's been exhausting on that front. And then on top of that, I do telemedicine, and I'm licensed in multiple states. So telemedicine has just exploded over the last few weeks. So I've been seeing patients trying to calm their fears down, direct them who to get testing. And so, you know, basically I average about maybe 5-6 hours sleep a night, but I've been fortunate enough to be able to work from home doing a lot of this so I can minimize exposure and, you know, not worry other people about being in their space.
What do you think is going to be with telemedicine? Do you think we're going to go back, or do you think that this is going to become the new normal after the coronavirus era is gone? Suddenly, so many more interactions between doctors and patients have been through the technology. I can't personally see it really going backwards.
Mm-hmm. You hit it on the head. People like to be in their pajamas. They like to be at home. They like to be able to call in the middle of the night and, you know, have a doctor on the phone, whether it's a phone call or whether it's a video call. And so, you know, telemedicine is here to stay. The popularity was rising exponentially before this, and now it's just, you know, gone out of this world. Unfortunately, things might slowly turn back if we start to hear about diseases getting missed. You know, there is concern that the telemedicine rise might have unfortunately put us at risk for some of this coronavirus because people would call in saying, I have the flu, and there was no way for us to test them for flu. You know, so we, you know, might have given them Tamiflu and said, you know, you sure you don't have what's going on in China? So, you know, depending on how the media approaches, you know, where telemedicine's role was in terms of the original spread, in terms of what we're doing now, it's so phenomenal that we have so much support, you know, with what we're doing that I think we're going to have a lot more, you know, use and a lot more applications of it.
Years ago, it was common practice for you to call the doctor and the doctor would come to your house. He'd park in front of your house. He'd come up to the door with a little black bag and take care of you right there while you're lying in bed. Maybe we're going back to that through, of course, technology.
It is. People want personal care. They want time. They want one-on-one with a provider without an audience being in the room. And, you know, they want to know that if they're in too much pain or too sick to leave, they could still have access to a medical professional.
Are you finding that some people have what my wife termed as a phantom virus, that people are becoming hypochondriacs and thinking they're sick when they're not? Oh, I have a headache.
Yes, I love that you asked that. After we were told that we would have to lock down here in Nevada, all of a sudden, people were just talking about how, gosh, I think I have it. I'm coughing. I'm sneezing. And it's because they weren't getting outside and getting fresh air. It's because they were confined as they would be when they were sick in the past. And so psychologically, your body thinks, oh, well, then I guess I am having a cold. So there is a huge psychological component to this. And a lot of people are feeling sick and stuffy and coughy, and they might not even be sick.
The major political issue this week has been health and science versus the economy.
I appreciate what Trump is trying to do in terms of, you know, calming people down because, you know, a bad economy and being unemployed has been linked to health issues. And, you know, we don't want an increased risk of suicide. We don't want an increased risk of people not having health insurance, you know, people not having jobs. So they are interrelated. On the other end, in order to contain this virus, we need to quarantine people, isolate. We need to test, find out who's healthy and who can be outside and who can't be. And so it is going to be a very fine choreography, and we're going to have to, you know, unfortunately, you know, blend the two because, you know, us being all on lockdown and shutting the country down is starting to cause other issues of people not being able to go to the doctor when they have a heart condition or pneumonia or another condition. But then on the other end, there's no way to stop this virus if we let people hang out, go out, shop, et cetera. So this is something we have never seen. And I think this is a dry run. I think this is a dress rehearsal for a worse virus that might hit us later, as the World Health Organization had cautioned us that could be. And so if there's any silver lining to this, if we figure out how to manage this now, we will be prepared when there's a deadlier virus that hits.
That's nationally syndicated radio talk show host and widely respected physician, Dr. Dahlia Wax. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. Let's get a quick update now on our scam report from the webmaster of Scamicide.com. He's a prolific author and professor of law at Bentley University in Boston, Steve Wiseman. So, Steve, I understand that the statistics are such that there are more scams, particularly cyber scams and hacking scams, taking place during this crisis. What's the reality of it?
The reality of it is, again, it's not as bad as you think, it's worse. Oh, it is incredible. If we think that the coronavirus is spreading tremendously, the scams are spreading even faster and more broadly, and they're across the board. There are scams for phony cures. There are scams for phony investments. There's all kinds of scams. The one that is going to really be hitting in the upcoming weeks is now that Congress has actually passed legislation to have checks and funds be sent to Americans, depending on the level of your income, that is where we really are going to see some scams. And they're going to take place in a couple of ways. The way, the real way these checks are going to be sent is they're going to look to your most recent income tax return. If you got in your 2019, they'll look at that. If not, they'll look at your 2018. If you had your refund sent to a bank account, your check from the government, and it will be coming from the IRS, will also be sent to that same bank account. If, like me, you don't have the government wire money to you, they will be sending it to the address that you have by check, paper check, on the address that you used on your income tax return. That's it. It's as simple as that. But what we're going to see is we're going to see people being called from the IRS or from the Department of the Treasury, and they're going to be told that they need to pay a certain fee in order to get their check, or we need to confirm information like your Social Security number. It's all scams, and it's scams such that on your phone, you can't even trust your caller ID. If you look at your caller ID, it may say IRS, it may say Treasury Department, but the truth is that it's very simple for a scammer to what they call spoof, trick your caller ID to make it look like it's coming from there. The government is not going to be sending you an email. They're not going to be sending you a text message. They're not going to be asking for any money. They're not going to be asking for any personal information. All of this, though, will be ignored by the scammers, and there will be people who are so concerned about this, they're going to fall for the scam. So I know I say, trust me, you can't trust anyone, but you got to trust me on this one. You don't need to do anything to get your check.
That's law professor Steve Wiseman of Bentley University in Boston and the amazing website Scamicide.com. Coming up next, a visit to several hotspots located around our shrinking global village. We're going to Byron Bay, Australia, Copacabana Beach in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, a look across the pond at the UK, and a conversation with a legendary rock star living in Toronto, Canada. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap.
Here's some great news. If you missed the deadline to sign up for health insurance, or if you signed up for a plan you're not happy with, you still have a choice. MediShare is a healthcare sharing program. Hundreds of thousands of Christians are part of this. It can save you a lot. Typical savings for a family is about $500 a month. You can join MediShare anytime. It's easy to call and look into it. There's no pressure at all. And man, what a difference it can make. 855-SHARE-40. That's 855-SHARE-40. This is a message from everyone at MediShare, and it's a simple one. For nurses, hospital staff, doctors, thank you. Thank you for what you do and may be called on to do in the days ahead. And thank you, first responders and grocers and everyone who works late nights to stock shelves. Thank you, truck drivers and delivery workers. Thank you, caretakers of the elderly and vulnerable. To everyone who has their own families to be concerned for, but still serves all of us, thank you. From the more than 400,000 members of MediShare.
Continuing now with the Michael Harrison Wrap as we discuss the hottest topics of this past week in the national conversation, which has actually become our international conversation. The coronavirus is showing us how small our planet actually is, and how we as a fragile little species must stick together, as long as that togetherness keeps us at least 6 feet apart. I checked in with my friend Trevor Smith in Byron Bay, a beautiful town north of Sydney on the east coast of Australia. Trevor, who heads up Aloha Productions, is a radio legend in the land down under. Hey, mate, how are the folks down under handling the stress?
The humor, I don't know whether the humor is coming out in America, but the humor is certainly coming out in Australia, because we have a different expression to what you, when you say you're pissed, it means you're angry. But here we talk about, we take the piss out of things. In other words, we send them up, we satirize them, we try and find the light side in things. And so that's starting to happen now as well. Because otherwise, everybody will all just go stark raving yeah. mad.
Well, we have a problem in the United States anyway about humor. We were in a period of such hyper-political correctness that the comedy business has been suffering. There are comics that will not play at colleges or universities anymore because of how tight they are. I'm not going to use the part of the body that I'm referring to, but they're really tight, you know what, about any kind of humor that might offend anybody. And the people that are offended now are the, well, that's not funny. People are dying. You shouldn't be making jokes about this. And of course, that's true to a point, but there's also the other point that humor tends to relieve pressure. It tends to relieve the tension, and it makes it easier to get through life with a lot of the things, including the relationship between ethnicities and races. A case could be made that even that kind of humor, if done in the right spirit, can bring people together as opposed to pull them apart. So we have a humor problem here that goes before, that goes beyond and before this coronavirus. Do you have that going on there before the virus? Is there a situation, you know, where that's not funny, you're offending people, stifling that kind of expression?
Yeah, we do. We're not immune from that. But probably a bit less politically correct, or whatever the expression is down here, because, as I say, we're a pretty irreverent bunch generally, and there's only, like, you know, there's only a handful of us, really. There's only 25 million, so you can sort of wrap your hands around the population a little bit more. But yeah, the universities, they're, you know, that's where the problem lies, I think, in terms of not having a developed sense of humor. But down the pubs and clubs and on the work site and the other places that you go, yeah, there's still a laugh being had out there. And I believe the humor is a gift, without sounding too hippie about it, a gift from the universe. You know, we need it.
That's Australian radio legend Trevor Smith. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison rap. Let's head down to another Southern Hemisphere hotspot, Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, and our intelligence agent on Copacabana Beach. She's an American expat and world-renowned artist who's been painting there for the past 30 years. Bobby Winston, known to her fans as La Femme Babé. So, Bobby, you have a bird's-eye view of everything happening. You're right near the beach, and Copacabana, and that, of course, is one of the famous beaches of Rio. And you've seen a transition in terms of how the society in Brazil is operating from the recent carnival to the present lockdown. Take us through the scenario. What was it like at carnival, and then what happened where it went from one extreme to another?
Carnival here is very important, and they carry on as normal, whether it's raining, whether it's cold, whether it's hot. In this particular carnival, we were already hearing a lot about what was happening in China, and then spreading, of course, to other parts and Europe. So there was a slight damper on the festivities. But overall, everybody participated except me. I took it very seriously and stayed in. My sources on the ground tell me that it was fun. They had a wonderful time. Nobody was really interested in the facts as they were coming out of China at the time. I took it very seriously, as I said, but it's just about now, the past week or two, hitting the Brazilians, of the seriousness, and they're following the science, the medical experts, and the governors are taking that role out front and considering health before economy.
So where is the president, Bolsonaro? Where is he at? I understand that the people have been banging their pots and pans out the windows in protest of him.
Yes, this is the way Brazilians protest when they can't get on the ground to do it. And there are a few windows that are lit up, and you can see some people banging on pots. This is going on all across the country now for the past 8 days and probably tonight.
Do they bang constantly? Is it going on all the time?
Yes, they bang constantly for about 15 minutes. We start at about 8 o'clock, and we bang for about 15, 20 minutes, and miraculously, then it gets quiet again.
Is this a coordinated effort, or it just happens, it starts and everybody follows and then it fades out?
This is the way we do it here. We've done it before with other situations, and the people are speaking. This is the way the people are speaking. We're all confined, but we're speaking loudly, and the president is against the isolation. He wants to, after 2 days that we are in isolation officially, he is ready to open it up. The country and the Congress are condemning him. They use that word, condemning. They are condemning him. They're accusing him. He is insane. His behavior is showing it. And this is the state we're in as of this moment now.
That's American expat artist Bobby Winston, a.k.a. La Femme Bobby, checking in from Rio de Janeiro. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. Let's head back now to Washington, D.C. in a conversation with our international woman in the nation's capital, the executive director of the D.C. radio company, Victoria Jones.
Prime Minister Boris Johnson gave a short speech to the nation earlier this week in which he announced effectively a total lockdown, but it wasn't quite. And there's been a lot of controversy about construction workers continuing to work. And because construction workers have been fighting back and saying, we're at risk. Meantime, people are only allowed to go out in twos. And there has been some interesting guidance from the government saying, look, if you're in a relationship with someone, you either need to live together or split up for the duration.
How do you think the psychology of the English differs from the psychology of Americans in this stressful situation? Or are people basically just people?
I think there's a big element of people being just people, but I think there's a couple of things at play. One is that it's a smaller country, it's more densely populated, it has a more closely bound general memory of recent large-scale wars, like the Second World War, which is very much in its mind because it's taught in school. So even Generation Z knows about the Second World War. So there's that feeling about it. Also, there is a national spirit rather than, in addition to a local and state spirit. So that when one day this week, a call went out from the National Health Service that we need 250,000 volunteers now from people overnight, that night, 170,000 volunteers who are healthy over 18 to drive trucks, deliver shopping, take people to the emergency room, do all these things. Overnight, 170,000 people signed up. They got the 250,000 within a day or so. That is a huge number in a country of 65 million people. That's the British spirit. And that's what you have. And you've got retired doctors, nurses coming back. You've got people who haven't quite qualified stepping up. And that's very much the spirit of the Blitz. Having said that, you've also got a lot of complete idiots.
Well, there are idiots everywhere. That's our international woman in the nation's capital, Victoria Jones, executive director of the DC Radio Company. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. We've got time for one more in our series of shrinking global village conversations. This is a real interesting one. When I first became involved in radio, it was back in the era of progressive album rock. In those days, musical artists were very much like talk show hosts today. They had strong opinions on what was going on in the country and expressed them as thought leaders through music. People like Bob Dylan, groups like Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, and of course the Beatles. Most of them took a liberal or progressive perspective, and their fans were called hippies. When I found out that one of my buddies from those days, the lead singer of Blood, Sweat, and Tears, the big voice David Clayton Thomas of Spinning Wheel fame, has just written and performed a brand new solo album of hard-hitting, opinionated protest songs titled Say Something, I jumped on the phone and caught him at his home in Toronto to discuss it. David, your album talks about the justice system, guns, climate change, and a bunch of stuff that we used to call protest songs. Other than rap, which I don't know all that much about, people aren't making protest songs anymore.
Well, rap music is protest music too, yes. But it's very racially slanted. I come from an era where the music did not have to be racially protesting anything, you know? There's a lot of stuff going on in this world right now. While there are racial aspects to it, are not what's driving it. Race is not driving climate change. Race is not driving gun control. These are political issues, and they're things we all live with every day. You can't sit here and watch every two or three days in the United States another mass shooting. It's gotten so common, we don't even pay attention to it anymore. And so I thought it was time somebody paid attention to these things.
Is the political or the social atmosphere in Canada similar to the way it is in the U.S.? You mentioned just now, you said in the United States, you're commenting on U.S. issues from a Canadian perspective.
Oh, with gun control? Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
We don't have mass shootings every 3 days in Canada. Why not? You can't get automatic weapons. You can't be walking around with a handgun in your pocket all the time, you know? We have very strict and very sensible gun control laws up here. It's the only difference. If you listen to the song, it says in the song, we both watch the same movies, we both watch the same TV, we both play the same video games. How come your country's all is shooting each other up every day and we're not? Well, guns. Get real, folks.
You attribute it to the abundance of guns as opposed to maybe something
Absolutely.
Else?
You know, in this coronavirus age, you know what the biggest selling thing is, other than toilet paper? Guns. Everybody's lining up at the gun stores. You know, catastrophe's coming. I got to get myself an AR-15.
Up here,
we're just stocking up on toilet paper.
I asked a talk show host recently, what's your comment on the extreme rise in the sale of ammunition and guns? And he said, well, you got to have something to protect your stash of toilet paper during these times. So what do you see for the world? Are you optimistic? Are you pessimistic? What do you see ahead?
I don't know. And I hate to say it that way, but I just don't know. We're looking into the abyss right now. I've never seen anything politically like this Trump administration. I've never seen anybody just completely blow all the norms away. All the things we thought we could depend on. You know, remember when an incoming president always spoke respectfully of his predecessor? Remember those days?
Of course.
Because you had to respect the fact that the man had served for 8 years in the most difficult job in the world. And to come in and replace him, you showed respect for his service. Trump came into office and just went right after Obama with a chainsaw. And he's been trashing him ever since. It's just a madness out there. And I wish I was in the prediction business, but I'm not. Right now, I'm just wondering when I'm going to get my gigs back.
Former Blood, Sweat, and Tears lead singer David Clayton Thomas talking about his hard-hitting opinions unabashedly expressed in his new album, Say Something. Opinions that are not always in league with the conservative-leaning points of view often expressed on commercial talk radio. And that brings us to the conclusion of another program. This has been the Michael Harrison Wrap, looking back at this past week of Monday, March 23rd through Friday, March 27th, 2020. Looking ahead, I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about next week, including the ever-lurking unknown factor, which I think has already hit us, that unexpected surprise story that can take the national conversation spinning off in a totally unexpected direction. We sure do live in interesting times. I can be reached via email at michael@talkers.com. My podcast, The Michael Harrison Interview, can be heard at mhinterview.com. And if you want to stay in touch with the inner workings of the talk media industry, please visit talkers.com. And that does it for this week's installment of The Michael Harrison Wrap, an overview of the national conversation. Our producer is Matthew B. Harrison. Thank you for listening.
The Michael Harrison Wrap is a production of Good Phone Communications in association with Talkers Magazine. Copyright 2020, all rights reserved.